Hi there, I'm Alan Neal, and welcome to Reading the Room. For the next hour, you are part of the All in a Day Book Club, which may sound a little different than your book club discussions.
I have friends who, you know, smoke weed. It's almost draining in a way because, you know, having to repeat yourself, say 20 times over the same thing, it's just like, oh my God, can you just understand already?
Do drugs, don't do anything else. While you could be doing something in the middle, you know, do some drugs, do some schoolwork, you know, do a bit of everything. You don't need to be going all out all the time.
There's a public service announcement in there somewhere.
These young members of the All in a Day Book Club were excited to discuss Wayne Ng's book, Johnny Delivers. For this meeting, we rewound time and held it at Ottawa Technical Secondary School, which dates back to right around the time period the novel Johnny Delivers takes place in, 1977. This novel is, in some ways, a time capsule of 1977. Star Wars is new, Rush has just released Farewell to Kings, and pot is still a crime. And that is the world of teenager Johnny Wong, working at his family's Chinese food restaurant, trying to hold together that family, making extra money by dealing drugs to customers who code their orders as egg rolls with mustard. But he's also a guy who's at crossroads trying to figure out his own life, which, as we discovered during the evening, was a lot like many of the students right here at this tech school 50 years on. So let's head into the auditorium as I introduce Wayne to the book club members gathered inside. Welcome to the All in a Day Book Club, Wayne Ng.
But this auditorium, I mean, this, yeah. like 1970s, where are you instantly when you're here?
Well, I guess Central Tech. Mm-hmm. It was the largest high school in Canada. I can't remember if the seats were orange. I don't know how many schools there are left in Canada with orange seats, but you found it.
I found the one, yeah. Ottawa Tech. Yeah. It is that. Who was Wayne Ng in high school?
Probably not nearly as brave, courageous, and reckless as the Johnny in the book.
Okay.
Yeah, I would have been really upset with any attention. Just the very opposite of the Johnny, who really tried to take charge of things with the restaurant and to save the family. I was parentified like that, Johnny.
Yeah.
But I doubt I had that level of recklessness to sell weed.
I'll come back to recklessness in a moment. The Johnny in the book, though, seems to be very much wrestling with how Western to be, how Asian to be.
Right.
Whether being as Asian as he is, he's going to be able to pursue dreams. Was that Wayne?
I think that's the psychological challenge and space that a lot of diaspora novels and kids are at.
Yeah.
You know, they're trapped by their heritage, their history, their expectations of parents. And given the weight of inherited silence and the history of not being wanted and belonging, they want to be part of something else, something bigger, wider, whiter, but they're not accepted into that, so they're sort of trapped in that in-between space, and that's probably where I spent much of my life, not just in high school.
Iris, where are you? There, Iris is right here. Iris, you were saying that you also had that battle as you put it, the westernized Asian. What did you relate to in the book when you were reading that?
Oh, absolutely. Just growing up and sticking to your roots when you're with your family, but then kind of battling this identity crisis as you're sort of out in the world and out in Canada or out in this Western country. And I could just so relate to Johnny in that way. So thank you for writing an excellent book.
What were your roots?
I was born in the Philippines, but I grew up in Malaysia, and I went to an American international school. So that's why I sound this way, right? But then I moved to Australia for university, grew up there, never took on the Australian accent. And then I moved to Canada 3 years ago. Still don't sound Australian, but now I sound Canadian, but I still look Asian. So it's just that lifelong of like, where do I belong? Where do I come from? And it's just these books about that diaspora and just wanting to belong, but also embracing the differences that you grew up with. I just could so relate to that.
It's interesting because part of what Johnny is wrestling with as well is trying to keep a family together. He's got a family with a certain, you know, obviously they've got a livelihood that they're trying to manage, but he's got a very dysfunctional family that sort of forces him into a pretty adult role as as a teen as well. Michaela, where is Michaela? There's Michaela. Michaela, you were saying this was one thing that you sort of related to as well.
I think I said specifically page 181, all of that just felt really relatable. And I think even though, you know, there's parts where, you know, Johnny's mom is saying, don't be stupid or I'll disown you. And I'm not saying this to say that my parents ever said this to me. They did not speak to me in this way. But there's that feeling of like, I, you know, growing up was also helping my parents translate things and being the dominant English speaker in that household. And I was always making sure that I was doing something to make sure that they also looked good. So I was an extension of them. And not to say that I didn't have a wonderful childhood or have wonderful a wonderful upbringing, but it was part of my responsibility also to make sure that they felt seen and heard in Canada as well, because they also, you know, they were refugees and they came to Canada, and I exist in this world of privilege, but also I have this you know, this like heavy shoulder of expectation on me to make sure that I'm also making sure that they I don't know the word look good. I don't know if that's not the right word I'm looking for, but yeah, I just felt so relatable, even though I think there's like a peaceful but painful solidarity in knowing that that was what Johnny was experiencing in the 1970s, and me growing up in the 2000s, it's something that I'm also experiencing. So it doesn't ever really go away, but I don't know. Yeah, there's like that alliance there that feels nice and also sad, kind of.
Can I ask, when you say trying to make your parents look good, so to speak, can you give me an example, the kinds of things that you're...
Yeah, I think it was that like... I want to say like subtle racism in school where kids would be like, oh, your parents don't speak English. And I'm like, no, they speak English. And also they speak several different languages and your parents just speak English. But it was like this thing where it's like, I don't want you to look down on my parents, because I think they're the most incredible people in this world. And for somebody to make snide comments or rude comments and have no idea about their background or how strong they are as people, I was like, I need to make sure that I'm making, like, doing the right things and being this perfect daughter and not making any mistakes on my behalf to make sure that they stay kind of like these idols that I really want the world to see them as. And so I've put that responsibility on myself, if that makes sense.
Wayden, what's going through your mind listening to Michaela?
Well, I'm glad the story is relatable, because it's engineered to be that way, because I think most stories, especially when you have a teenage protagonist, they're generally about identity, right? They ask central questions like, who am I? Where do I belong? Where am I going? I mean, you look at characters in popular culture like Katniss Everdeen, Jon Snow, Harry Potter, Luke Skywalker, Bella Swan. What do they have in common? Okay, they're white. They're cisgender straight. They're young and subjectively attractive. I mean, we could go on. But they all ask that same question. But I think the outcome is different for us. For diasporic youth, because with those five heroes, they're on a predestined path. They're meant to be the hero. They know what their role is. Whereas for us, you know, answering that question, who am I, there's no clear-cut answer. You know, at the end of the story, there's no clear victory. You know, where it's a constant negotiation between self and society, our past, and where we are now. We're carrying the weight of assimilation, cultural baggage, expectations, and identity is not a fixed point for us, because you know, you can't climb a mountain and say, I've arrived. Like, unlike Luke Skywalker and, you know, Frodo, there's no big parade, there's no trumpets blaring. And in Johnny Delivers, I know, Iris, you didn't finish the ending yet. So you may want to cover your ears.
Busted. Wow.
I know.
Don't let the author know
away.
You didn't finish the book. I don't finish half these books. Yeah. I mean, no.
I mean,
you dare ask me a question, I'm going to out you. So Johnny, at the end, there's no horns blaring. There's no parade. He's very much alone, right? So it's not the same kind of outcome and victory as a non-diasporic sort of ending.
That is author Wayne Ng sitting with book club members Iris and Michaela and about 100 others as the All in a Day book club discussed Wayne's latest novel, Johnny Delivers. The Johnny in the title is a high school senior in 1970s Toronto, Johnny Wong, in fact, working as hard at his parents' Chinese food restaurant as he is at balancing his Asian-ness and his Canadian-ness. Oh, and on the side, he starts earning money for the family by secretly selling weed alongside the egg rolls. Now, Johnny loves his family. He wants to protect his family. He does almost anything for his family. And our next reader, Jamie Gerard, wanted to comment on how she identified with being a kid who felt the need to protect her parents and mediate their relationship.
I remember just being in the 80s, you know, in the 80s, in the early 80s when, you know, interest rates were 20% and the amount of pressure that put my parents under. And things felt, you know, unstable. And I think I took on, I felt like I had a responsibility to mediate things, or that I could mediate things in some way. And I think there's a certain, maybe like a youthful hubris, or we think we can control things that we can't control.
Well, and also just the hope that you are going to be able to make things better as well, right? Like the Johnny, I think even with this crazy plan that he comes up with, he has at the heart of it the idea he's going to be able to fix things. We have students here today who are from Ottawa Tech, and Kay Bastian is here. Kay, you were saying you really related to Johnny when it comes to that idea of trying to fix things with your family, fix things with your mom. Tell me what you saw when you were reading this book.
Yeah, my whole life my mother was an alcoholic and always chose other things before me, and so from a very young age, I had to take the responsibility of being the parent and making sure things went okay. So seeing this from another another perspective, whether it was real or not, just kind of stuck out to me, I guess.
Yeah. You were saying that scene where he's looking for the shoes was one.
Yeah, it's the need for being reassured that you're going to wake up and they'll still be there when you do wake up, and that they're not just going to disappear when you need them the most.
Yeah.
And seeing him find other ways to try to help his parents out I've had the same thought where it's like, okay, I feel like we need more help, whether it was with cost and stuff. It's just, what can I do? Whether it was the worst scenario or decision or best, it was just the need to make sure everything was going to be okay.
So I was a social worker for 30 some odd years, so I worked with a lot of families, and families, they lock themselves into patterns, right? So Johnny started looking after his parents, looking after the family, well before he worked in the restaurant at 18. It started at 9, sooner than that, and it starts with him looking after himself, right? So that he can take that burden and responsibility off his parents. And it's not that, through Western eyes, we might think that's negligent, but through the eyes of an immigrant, where the parents are working all the time, you learn to look after yourself, and the parents learn to expect that their kids can do that and will do that. And, you know, through a child protection perspective, which I used to have, that might seem negligent, you know, and it's easy to judge that. But I grew up in a household like that where there were addiction issues and there were supervision issues. But, you know, if we snatched up all the kids who grew up in environments like that, you know, we would have foster homes just filled with kids whose parents were busy working. That's just sort of the role that kids are thrust into.
And I think we get a pretty good sense early on at just how much the parents are working all the time as well, like in terms of being able just to support and to continue.
It was normal.
Yeah. The racism that Johnny deals with in school, was this based on personal experience?
The
taunts, the bullying?
So, I mean, it's still going on, Alan. I think it's just a little more subtle. It's a little more discreet. Because I worked in high schools up until a couple of years ago, and kids would tell me, you walk down the hall and you get called this, you get called that. I think you're more likely to have allies. You're more likely to have people stand up for you now than you might have, let me do the math, 45 years ago. I mean, Johnny had Andrew. Nowadays, you would hope you'd have more allies who would say, that's just not cool, pal.
More people on your team.
Right.
Joining us on Zoom, Justin Wong, we have, who was out of high school not so very long ago. Hi, Justin. Are you there?
Alan, can you hear me?
Yeah, there you are. Hello there. Justin, you were saying you related to this element of the racism in school.
Yeah, no, definitely. So I've been out of high school for like 4 years now, but, you know, I remember in middle school and high school, you know, the internalized racism that you get from your classmates, like it's honestly still prevalent today. And it was really eye-opening reading this book and just seeing in the 1970s how the same sort of things that people would call, you know, me in high school, like it happened, I guess like 40 years, 50 years ago. You know, it's kind of crazy that maybe my parents would have gone through that same stuff. And, you know, the last thing I want is for my children, you know, when I grow up, I wouldn't want my children to go through that either. Cause you know, it's really painful and just like having to deal with it and brushing it off like it's nothing. You know, I think that going to university though, like, When you get to meet more like-minded people, even people of the same culture as you, you start to feel a little bit more comfortable. And I feel like now, as a university student, I feel more comfortable with people I'm around, you know, like-minded people versus the person I was in high school, middle school, trying to fit in as a result of like, you know, that racism that I endured.
Thanks for that, Justin. Rachel, who is in our audience, I believe. Rachel, there you are. You were saying you went through this in high school, but were not as brave and reckless as Johnny.
But there's one instance. I think he was liking a girl. Can't remember her name. Is it Angela? I can't remember.
Angie. Yeah.
Angie. But I remember that Johnny thought he had a chance with her, and then he finds out when she says, well, you know, that's not possible because you're an Asian, like you should stick with your kind. And that's when he sort of figures out, oh, you know, I thought I was quote unquote average, normal, accepted, but there's a line there. And that echoed my life, you know, but it wasn't in high school. It started way before that, where you're playing with kids that are your age and everything's fine. And then all of a sudden, well, oh, you can't go to, you know, my birthday party, or you can't do whatever because you're not white, basically. They wouldn't use those words back then, but it's the same idea. Yeah. And so I could relate to that, sadly.
You know, if you're second generation Scottish, you can call yourself Canadian, but if you're third generation Chinese Canadian, do you call yourself Canadian, Chinese Canadian, Chinese? It's still not very clear, you know, and part of that is not just that you don't get accepted by others, but there's part of you that you always feel like you're a guest. And that's the line that Johnny can't find, because I mean, so it said in 77, but Chinese history goes back 120 years before that. And I don't want to turn this into a history lesson, but Johnny's impacted by history. Like, really, it's a story about inherited trauma, inherited silence. So generations upon generations of social, systemic, and sanctions have told him you're not wanted. You're legally not wanted. You can't work here. You can't vote, you can't swim in that pool. And nobody talks about this.
Yeah.
So he's carrying this, right?
Ottawa author Wayne Ng speaking about the title character in his novel, Johnny Delivers. You're listening to Reading the Room here on CBC Radio 1. I'm Alan Neal. We're going to take a 5-minute break for local news. But when we come back, we'll hear more from more students at Ottawa Technical High School who identified with Johnny as an outsider, as well as a young guy a few years out of high school who identified with Johnny's side hustle of dealing drugs. To learn more about the All in a Day Book Club out of CBC Ottawa, you can visit cbc.ca/bookclub. We'll see you in 5.